Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. And what we have right now in our hands are spoonfuls of a very special Jell-O mold for the Crazy Food episode. That's right. Today we are talking about everything you never knew you wanted to know about crazy food.
This Jell-O is orange in color, but I don't know anything else about it yet.
Yeah. Okay. So I was trying to come up with a fun Jell-O mold that didn't include like weird meat products and celery. And this I'm calling the Russian tea Jell-O mold.
Oh, it's taken a turn so early in the episode. Oh.
And I'm naming it this because when I was in high school, I taught at a dance studio and one of the dance teachers had this drink she called Russian tea. Yeah. It was tang and cinnamon and we thought it was so cool. So yes. This Jell-O is orange Jell-O, tiny mandarin oranges and dissolved red hots. Let's give it a try.
Oh my. Oh, I'm doing it, everybody.
Oh, actually, I'm not mad at this. I went to Nebraska when I was in college. And at Thanksgiving, there were no less than like 12 different Jell-O molds. Mm-hmm. I think this would have done just fine.
This is a very weird experience because what my eyes are seeing is this orange Jell-O. Like, oh, I've got a can of mandarins, let's throw it in. But it is definitely like if you've ever got the Pike Street Market, the spice tea.
Oh, yes. It's Market Spice Tea.
Market Spice Tea. But it's Jell-O. So the texture is completely wrong. My brain isn't comfortable with this. But it doesn't, I don't want to not eat it.
Right? I know. I want you to talk about Jell-O, like the history of Jell-O.
Putting my plate down.
So that I can actually have another spoonful because I'm going to do that.
Jell-O is quite interesting and you know because I'm telling you, but I'm also going to prove it. I have a wonderful gift from my sister Ruth. It is a book called Jell-O, A Biography by Carolyn Wyman. And Carolyn manages to create a whole book about this. And it's quite interesting. It's very in-depth, and it's a subject that we'll only scratch the surface of. She starts off with, where did Jell-O come from? How long has it been around? And it's been around since Napoleon's time and Richard II. It is a very labor-intensive process to go from animal to Jell-O.
I was going to say, vegetarians, mm-hmm. vegans, this is the time where you plug your ears.
Yeah, visit us back in maybe 5 minutes. It'll be worth coming back. It started out in, if you had to make this on your own, it would take the better part of a day into the night. There was a chef who described the process. She said she'd made it twice, and the only reason she made it a second time is because she needed to write out the recipe for her cookbook. It was that bad, because you are taking maybe a whole hoof or an animal bone of some kind, and you're rendering it, basically. Another source, Carolyn Wyman's book, actually said that it is a lot like making purified glue. So there's a lot of waiting and rendering and boiling it down. So that's already a lot of gross words.
Yeah.
Now, we're stopping that train here.
No one in America is going to eat Jell-O ever again. Thank you, Brain Junk.
I just did, and I did this research. How did we get from it being a special thing that was served by royalty and only very occasionally to it's on the shelf at the grocery store and you can buy raspberry? Peter Cooper is largely responsible for the modernization and making it something boxable that comes in sheets or comes granulated. He was actually a steam locomotive company fella. He helped lay the first Atlantic cable and he ran a glue factory. So that's where Mr. Cooper comes in.
We figured out how to make that rendering process fast enough that it was cheap and easy to make into Jell-O.
So Peter Cooper, he created it. He figured it out. You could have it in a box. It didn't go anywhere, though. He didn't have the means to bring it to production. So it kind of floundered around. And not until the late 1800s, an individual gentleman named Pearl White, who was a carpenter by day and a patent medicine maker by night, he actually created a granulated boxable version, too. And so Pearl White didn't have a way to sell this or to package it and manufacture it and get it out there. Whereas Grano was already a product on the market that was very popular.
Grano sounds like Drano. Why doesn't Jell-O sound like that to me? But Grano, you're saying, and I'm thinking it's got to be a cleaning product, but it's not.
High fiber, it could be.
I guess that is a cleaning product.
So he bought, Orator Woodward bought Jell-O from Pearl White for $450. And at that time, that was probably more.
Yeah.
But considering now, to buy a Jell-O commercial on air at the time of the writing of the Jell-O biography, it was $200,000 to buy a Jell-O spot. So there's money in Jell-O.
Wow.
And so I feel a little sad for Pearl Wait that he missed that boat. But I don't think he had the means to get it to where it is so that we can eat our spicy weird jello here
today. No, it's not spicy weird. It's Russian tea jello mold.
She's trying to sell this, folks. I'm not sure you're going to see it on the store anytime soon. But I feel like you're equipped almost enough right now to do this at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
The jello story is long and involved. It does not end here. It's actually quite an interesting sociological picture of society because this was a product that was really more mass marketed in the early 1900s, but really rose to popularity for a lot of factors in the post-war era. One of the reasons is during the war, sugar was rationed, but jello was not. You could buy jello and have a sweet treat without a ration coupon. And so folks got pretty creative about that desserty thing. And then post-war, women are coming back into the home. Women are working more. We have canned foods and a sudden influx of more readily available processed food. So we have this at our fingertips, but we still have women that were born in the 20s and have a very traditional idea of what a household is and what their role is. So we have this intersection of those two factors where they could throw jello on the table, but they're also supposed to put together a nice meal. And so you have the advent of these really strange jello casseroles, jello salads. They called them salads. And I'm still not entirely sure how they got here. So they would dump a canned vegetable, any kind of meat they had around, make into a beautiful mold and have a beautiful meal. So it was processed food. It was fast, but it still was a prepared thing. It really married those two warring factors and brought them together and allowed a homemaker or a modern woman to use those processed foods, but also create that beautiful home-cooked meal.
So in addition to the jello mold, mm-hmm. you have a spam creation here that also is kind of following that same thought of, this meat came out of a can, but I'm going to do more to it. It's like when you have to go to a bake sale.
Box mix and two eggs and a quarter cup of oil.
And it's still processed, but you've done something. Tell us about your lovely spam thing you have here.
My spam is quite beautiful, and we will post pictures. I have used spam. Spam was, wartime was a main source of protein for soldiers, and they got pretty tired of it. So after war, when they came home, they would have, oh, she's cutting me a slice, you guys. I just wanted to look at it. Okay, I have it in my hand. This is a beautiful strata. Imagine long slices of spam with a beautiful cream cheese and salsa mixture between. So you have this wonderful stripy loaf out of which we cut a nice, beautiful, I'm using beautiful a lot because it doesn't smell very good.
Well, no, it's not that it doesn't smell good. It's just that it has a kind of, it's processed meat, right? So mm-hmm. it has a kind of dog food smell quality, but
I'm
then,
cooked, yeah.
I don't know, it's okay, let's just do
Ready?
This.
We're going to do this. Yep. It's on crackers. We're going to crunch.
Oh, it's so salty.
I licked my fingers when I was preparing it and I'm like, whoa.
Well, if you're dehydrated, this is the food to have. Because you'll get your electrolytes back.
All right. As much as I'm saying that it has an unusual smell and, I don't know, and texture.
It's not bad.
I enjoyed it.
This is like the trashy magazine that you would never read, but then you go to the hairdresser or the doctor's office and it's there and you're like, oh, I have to read this because it's that guilty pleasure, I think.
Precisely.
This spam loaf, what do we call this thing?
I think spam strata sounds nicer than though.
Spam strata. Oh, this spam strata is so delectable.
Mm. Yeah. In my family, we actually celebrate spam holiday around my birthday every year. Some years we abstain because not all family members adore spam in the way. In the nostalgic way that I do.
I guess, I think I've had spam musubi where you have, it's like a sushi and there's a piece of spam on top of it.
Do they toast it up or is it fresh?
Well, and see, that's the thing. It's toasted and so it's kind of mm-hmm. brown and it's got that seared thing.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a sausage.
Yeah.
And I think I find that more palatable than the
mm-hmm.
the uncooked part of me is like, that's raw.
I'm pretty sure you're having the same experience as soldiers and three meals a day.
Oh.
They were probably grateful because it's not like canned beef that they ate in World War I, but it's also the same thing. So salty over and over and over and maybe or maybe not cooked depending on where they were.
Because we were shipping this out for World War
II.
World War II. Okay.
Yeah, spam's been around since before that. You could formerly, before they processed it and put it into 12-ounce cans, you could go to the deli and buy slices off of a 6-pound loaf.
What?
Yeah. Can you imagine 6 pounds of, that's like almost, that's a newborn baby size of spam.
6 pounds. I know, I'm thinking like the size of a large loaf of cheese that we like to get. And that's yeah. a, wow, that's a lot. Well, you know, another thing that you can get if you're down in the South in your average deli or say you're stopping at a gas station.
So I'm from the Northwest and Southerners have a really different palate than I do. And I feel a little nervous about this next one.
I'm so excited about this. I want to talk to you about Kool-Lickles or Kool-Aid pickles. Yes, that's right. I have right now a jar of dill pickle chips and here.
Oh,
and.
Yeah.
You pour all of the pickle juice out of the jar and you put it into a bowl and you add a half a cup of sugar and you whisk until it dissolves. And then you add 1 packet of cherry Kool-Aid. Now, you don't have to use cherry. I've seen them, like, I saw this picture on Google where someone had used every single flavor. So they laid out a pride rainbow of pickles.
Really weird pickles.
Yeah, but the cherry ones are the classic.
Okay.
So,
I'm bringing my plate over.
I haven't opened this for, oh, and you're supposed to mix it up and wait a week. This has gone 4 days. I've been dying to open this up and, oh, let me sniff. Well, they still smell like pickles with like this little hint of cherry.
Yeah, the longer you smell, the more ominous it becomes because there's definitely a background note that says eating pickle, drinking Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And the pickle chip itself is no longer green. They take up most of the dye. In fact, the pickle juice when I first mixed it was bright red. And now it's kind of pickle colored. And the pickles have absorbed all of that. And the peel is still pretty green. I'm going to hand one of these to Amy.
It's a little like a girl said, I would like some pink camo. And they mixed olive green and dark pinky red. It's on my plate now. I'm wondering if these would be better or worse with sweet pickles.
No, you've added half a cup of sugar and it would be, although, you know, I've lived in the South and I've had their sweet tea and there really isn't anything as too much sugar for sweet tea.
No.
But for these pickles, no.
I feel like they might just sprinkle a dash of sugar on top, hit it with a torch and it would be like pickles brulee.
They actually don't smell too bad.
It's a little weird, everybody.
I'm going to say not my favorite thing ever.
Not as bad as I expected.
I watched a, I watched a video where some people were eating these and one of the guys was like, I hate pickles. That's like the only food I won't eat. And he actually ate his entire Kool-Lickle because he felt like it didn't taste like a pickle anymore. I think what he didn't like was the dill. And so you bite into this and you get the first thing that hits you is that dill flavor. And then the whole back of your mouth does this weird tangy cherry flavor thing.
Yes. Yep.
I could imagine on a super hot day, of which they have a lot in the South, that this would appeal.
And I'm team dill pickle. And so these, it's a little too wrong for my palate. It's not bad. I didn't want to spit it out.
No, but this is, I mean, but these Kool-Lickles kind of step into that same arc that you were talking about with the spam and the jello.
Yeah.
In that you've got Kool-Aid and you've got a dill pickle processed. And then we're going to mix it together and make something completely new. Okay. Well, so far, my Russian tea jello mold is winning.
I think so, yes.
Okay, so what we're going to step onto next is this glorious thing that you have made for us, the Yankee Doodle Pizza Pie.
It is baked beans on top of a, you would get a can of biscuits, you'd spread them out and squish them down in your pan, and I forgot to bring pizza sauce, so ours is just unadulterated.
Hold on.
Okay, Trace offered, but I wasn't sure I could handle that flavor treat.
Biscuits,
yeah,
pizza sauce, and baked beans?
I felt like that might be too much for us today. So I didn't really mind forgetting it. Can you imagine that? I don't think I can.
This kind of falls into the category. My husband, Chaz, talks about something called zip foods. Mm-hmm. And in college, they kept trying to come up with like the weird combination of food that no one would ever eat, like a green olive brownie or something like that. And a lot of these... Okay, I'm just going to throw it on the 1950s and the 1960s. Yeah. A lot of these creations that they were coming up with, I almost feel like in a way somebody just opened the cupboard and they were like, baked beans, spaghetti sauce, what the hell? And they just made something.
Yeah, I also agree. But they still felt like they had to cook it and serve it. Mine has a lovely cheese and tomato garnish. Okay, Here goes, team.
If you like baked beans, I think you'd be all over this. Because this is just like having baked beans and you're dipping a biscuit in. I really feel like we're cheating by not having the... Actually, we have a little tomato slice.
Should we put it on? I'm team cheese. I've stolen cheese garnish.
Okay, and I grabbed tomato to simulate the tomato sauce. Here, try your cheese there and we'll see. What do we... See, the nice thing is with the power of editing, I can cut out this long chewing pause.
She hasn't eaten any yet.
No, because I was waiting for your input. She's saying that like it's an accusation.
Delicious. Try it.
You haven't eaten that yet. It's like we're at a party and your mom makes you take that thing that you don't want to eat and you just carry it around.
Yeah. It's like eating baked beans with a baked bean crust almost. The biscuit dough doesn't have enough of its own distinct flavor or it shares that processed taste.
I think this would have been better if we'd eaten it right when it came out of the oven because right now...
I'm not sure better's the word.
It's kind of... Well, no, because I think the... I think the crust definitely would have kept some of that crunchiness that it has lost in the half an hour it took us to get
ours. The biscuit crust was crunchy?
Yeah. I have a large...
Trace is looking at me like I've maligned her oven or something.
You can never come back here again. You ever done there's another created food, the camp out thing where you take a hot dog and you stick it on the stick and then you take that biscuit dough like you did where the can that you whap, you know, and then you wrap that around the hot dog with your super dirty camping fingers and then you cook that over a fire. I can imagine some dad being cracking open a can of baked beans and you dipping this thing into
the... We forgot the forks, but it's still not a problem.
Oh, no, it's still good, you know?
It is. It's not that far off base either because I believe the British eat like beans on toast. And beans are a part of breakfast. I've seen them in English cozy mysteries.
I don't know how baked beany they are.
It's a little different. I don't know what kind of beans they eat. I've not been there.
Maybe we should look that up. Finding British style baked beans in America. The biggest difference is that American baked beans are sweeter because they add brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
English baked beans come in a savory tomato style sauce. So actually having the tomatoes and the beans on there is like totally English style. And we are hacking on an entire country's cuisine. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Or paying homage to it.
Well, now I've come around. Maybe I'm just, I think what I was, okay, so here's the thing. If I had just, because I had the little slice of tomato on there.
Yeah.
If I had just tomato sauce.
Yep.
I think what I was thinking was spaghetti sauce.
Yes.
And so I'm like, that with oregano and rosemary. Oh, no, I don't think I would like that. But just to the tomato, I think I could.
That's okay. And as much as I'm like, oh, this is like baked beans on baked bean crust, I'm looking at it and I almost reach for it to have another bite automatically.
I finished my piece.
I like biscuit dough from the fridge because I am a modern.
Mm.
Yeah, this is the food of my people, but
that cheater biscuit dough is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited about what we have left, though.
We did a poll on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Deep fried Doritos versus Jell-O mold. And it was 77% deep fried Doritos.
Thank you, Internet.
Oh, I know. But then I still made a Jell-O mold anyway, because that's how I roll.
I feel like we needed to.
Exactly. But the deep fried Doritos are part of the giant legacy of fair food.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Amy, but when I go to a fair, what I love to do is watch other people
eat
the food that I'm like, there's no way I would ever eat the deep fried butter, but I want to watch somebody eat it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, just a little background on fair food. According to legend, the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis, Missouri, it's supposed to be the stage for the creation of the ice cream cone and the hamburger and the hot dog and peanut butter and cotton candy. What's unfortunate is that's not true. A lot of those things were either there or were soon to be made. Some of them were already around. Like they talked about iced tea being a new thing and it wasn't. We've been doing iced tea.
Could we say popularization?
Well, yes, because between 1851 and 1933, there were exhibitions of culture and tech going on every 4 years all over the world. And so we had people on both sides of the ocean eating new regional foods and different things. And so I would say that the birth of fair food was from these kind of exhibitions where people were trying things they'd never had. And then just as time has gone on, we have escalated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've done the Jell-O mold and we've done beans on toast and we've done Spam, but can we deep fry something? Can we make it bigger?
I feel like this is largely a result of me, small business owner, brings my stall to the fair And then I want to go home at some point. And so I leave my 16-year-old and their best friend in charge. And they're so responsible. It's going to be fine. So thanks, 16-year-olds working at the fair. We're pretty sure this is you.
They're like, hey, what if we took a Snickers bar and then we dipped it in the batter for the corn dogs and then fried it? Yeah. I think that is totally what happened. Either that or I think sometimes people slip and they're like, whoops.
Dropped it in.
Oh, well, let's
I'll cook it. Don't
let's
waste it.
Try it. Yeah. So we're going to try now deep fried Doritos.
I feel like my prediction is we are going to have crunchy exterior, and I'm feeling it in my hand and it's still very crunchy, but we will have soft in the middle. So it's going to be like, I don't know.
It smells like tempura, you know, like if you get a tempura vegetable or tempura shrimp on the outside.
Yeah. All right. Oh. I'm going to try it because I'm excited about these. I think I'm going to like them. It's like a furry Dorito.
These would take all the skin off the roof of your mouth if you ate more than like four of them.
I'm eating all of mine. I'll be back in a minute.
It's kind of like how you know that it's hurting your face and yet you're like, I'm going to eat just one more. Maybe I'll have a little water and that'll, you know, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got to tell you, I now see why these are super popular. Although I imagine if you were to find the deep fried Dorito at the fair, they would probably serve them with a side of ranch dressing and put cheese or something on them to really up the cholesterol level.
No, these are pretty good. I enjoy them. I think my family would enjoy them.
Should we eat one of these chocolate covered gummy bears?
Yeah. And I'll tell you that this whole episode has made me feel like June Cleaver, a woman of the 50s, where I now open the cupboard and I'm like, we have Sloppy Joe mix and we have some tater tots and cheese. So have sloppy tachos. I'm practically June Cleaver. Trey suddenly has the look that Chris gets.
You just took a huge detour into some sort of crazy psychological thing that you've
got. No, I totally feel like this just validates. Totally. Classy, cultured woman like June.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay, let's eat our last treat because it's the best treat.
Okay, so I've just done a little bit of reading here on gummy bears, and I think it's appropriate that we start with Jell-O, which is a gelatin-y sort of thing, and then your gummy bears, which originated in Germany, started as a soft gelatin-based candy that was really also big at street fairs.
Really?
Yeah.
And I'm then, eating my treat already.
And then the just the idea of dipping them in chocolate. We had a candy store that my mom would go to, and one of their like signature desserts was the chocolate dipped gummy bear.
Oh yeah.
And I loved them so much that I would eat them until my cheek muscles hurt because I couldn't chew them anymore, which is a deficit that I know I need to work on. And I haven't had one of these in ages.
And these are cinnamon bears, which is even better. I find the chocolate covered gummy bears, the texture makes the chocolate. It's so chewier that the chocolate crinkles off of it. I do like the flavor. But if you're going to have it in two bites, it doesn't work for me.
Well, you got to eat it, what, like in a couple? How many?
Probably should just eat the whole thing at the same time. I don't know why I'm trying to bite them in half.
Well, because if you make them, if you take bites, then they last longer.
Mm-hmm. But they're small.
That's true. And I just banged mine into my leftover Dorito. Oh, okay. And here, this is from an article by Bon Appetit about the brief history of gummy bears. Mm-hmm. And they say, when your kids plead that you ought to let them eat gummy candies instead of the rest of their pickled vegetables because they're both kind of nutrition, they've actually got a point. Historically speaking, cooking sugar along with fruit has been a long way to preserve or store a summer's harvest. So like jam. So technically, gummy candies are cousins of jams and jellies. I don't think that our cinnamon gummy bear really can do that. Before we go, what kind of food creation is something that you thought everybody in your town ate that when you got to college or out in the world, you discovered was not something that everybody ate? We want to know about that. So go on Facebook to our Facebook page, go on Twitter or Instagram, wherever you need to go. Take a picture of the thing if you want to.
Yes.
But we want to know, what are those things that you ate where everybody was like, what do you mean you put Cheese Whiz on cherries? You know, something weird, something strange. And then, you know, maybe we'll give it a try.
Maybe. We'll see. Please come visit us at brainjunkpodcast.com. We'll have pictures and more notes for you. Maybe some recipes for this lovely Jell-O concoction.
Absolutely.
And a little quick, we've got some fun videos of the prep because it's super in-depth. For this and other wonderful episodes, look for Brain Junk wherever you find your podcasts, like iTunes and Google Play Store.
We tweet at My Brain Junk, and you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Brain Junk Podcast. Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know, and I guarantee you will not be bored.
You might be hungry, though.